Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, on Friday, June 23rd. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here on our weekly get-together, and doing a solo job this week because after covering for my absence for the last 4 months, Max Armstrong deserves some time off. And so he's getting it this week and next week. But anyway, to take a look at the market activity as the political turmoil on Capitol Hill continues with the unveiling of the Republican health care plan that immediately Democrats said they didn't like it. A few Republicans said they don't like it either. That did have the health stocks in play this week. But today, the stocks ended higher, thanks to gains in tech and energy stocks that more than offset weakness in the financial sector. It was a slide in Home Depot that turned the Dow slightly negative at the close. But for the week, the Dow added just 0.5%. The S&P rose nearly 0.25%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.75% in the week's trade. The energy sector rebounded and finished the strongest of the S&P's 11 sectors. It was quite a turnaround in that oil market with an increase of 0.8%, as oil prices did come back from multi-month lows. But we'll talk more about the oil market this week in a moment. The bank stocks ended lower even after they passed their annual stress tests. Some of the results were weaker than expected, and the investors focused on a flattening yield curve in bank stocks. Healthcare rally faded today, investors trying to decide whether a Senate Republican bill to replace Obamacare would gain enough support to pass. The sector ended down just 0.1%, bringing back some of its losses after it dropped sharply in the session when Republican Senator Dean Heller became the 5th U.S. Republican senator to say he would not support a health care bill unveiled by his party. And it was a busy trading day on Wall Street. Over 10.5 billion shares changed hands on U.S. exchanges. That's well above the $7.2 billion average for the last 20 sessions. Now let's take a look at the oil market, because it played a role in activity on Wall Street this week. Oil futures did edge higher today with a lift from a weaker dollar, but finished a fifth straight week lower as OPEC-led production cuts have failed to really do much to reduce the global crude oil glut. At the end of the day and the end of the week, Brent futures up 32 cents, $45.54 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate crude up 27 cents at $43 a barrel. And for the week, both of those benchmarks lost nearly 4%, and oil currently sits just off 10-month lows. Again, the ongoing worries about rising production. The 5-week slide represents the longest stretch of weekly declines for the front-month contracts in oil since August of 2015. The oil market is on course for its biggest first-half percentage fall since the late 1990s, when rising output and the Asian financial crisis led to some sharp losses. And thanks to shale drillers, U.S. oil production has risen more than 10% in the past year to 9,350,000 barrels per day, and that's close to the level of top exporter Saudi Arabia. One analyst commented, rising U.S. output continues to stress markets with increasing evidence that improved efficiency and technology makes many of the shale activities profitable below $40 a barrel. Moving to the housing industry, some pretty positive reports for the housing industry this week. First of all, existing home sales unexpectedly went up in May to the third highest monthly level in a decade. The National Association of Realtors said Wednesday that existing home sales increased 1.1% to a monthly rate of 5,620,000 units. Economists polled by Reuters had predicted sales would drop 0.5%. And the number of homes on the market rose 2.1%, but compared to a year ago, supply of existing homes for sale down 8.4%. The median house price for existing homes did increase to an all-time high of $252,800. That is a 5.8% jump from a year ago, and partly a reflection of not much inventory on the market. But then what about new home sales? Well, U.S. single-family home sales rose in May, and the median sales price hit an all-time high. The Commerce Department said today that new home sales went up 2.9% to a seasonally adjusted rate of 610,000 units last month, and April sales pace was also revised sharply higher, up to 593,000 units from the previously reported 569,000. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast new home sales, which make up about 10% of all home sales, rising 5.4%. But actually, sales were up 8.9% on a year-over-year basis in May. And here, too, the median price, well, this one hit a record high. Median price of a new home, $345,800. That's up from $310,200 in the prior month. Across the nation's four regions, sales were mixed, down 25% in the Midwest, down 11% in the Northeast. But in the West, new home sales went up 13%. And in the South, the new home sales went up 6.2%. Well, there's more happening as well, particularly in the world of agriculture, where on Friday we get a supply-demand report, planted acreage report, and a quarterly pig crop report. Stay with us, because we're going to talk markets with Paul Giorgi of Allendale when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Paul Giorgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, joins us today for our discussion of markets. And this is really my first weekend back after a long absence. But that absence, watching the markets, man, they've been all over the place.
Well, some of them have. Some of them have been all over the place. Livestock markets certainly have. Grain markets have moved mostly in the downward direction in the last few weeks here anyway. But we've certainly still been in the trading range in corn. I mean, you stick their head out above the trading range for a day or two or a week, and then we fall right back into the trading range. So the biggest problem that I see, Orion, is that we still have got a large supply of corn, old crop stocks that we have to move, And that's what's dragging on the market right now. We've got a lot of grain that has to be priced based on the some of the contracts that farmers have made, the basis contracts, deferred pricing contracts that come due right here at the end of June. They've got to get them priced, and that's putting extra pressure on the market as we see it here in the last few days.
Fair amount of discussion about a month ago that there were a lot of shorts in the grain market. Have they changed that position?
There was a lot of shorts. Funds had 200,000 shorts at one point in time, and as of last week here, they have come to they've basically flat the corn market. So they have got out of those shorts pretty much flat. Funds actually have been buyers in soybeans and in wheat as well. So they've reduced their short positions, but it hasn't done much to our upside momentum here. It's given us a little bit of boost, but still staying in the trading range.
Yeah,
weather is the big factor that we've got to deal with.
Right, but with the replanting being done, pollination time is going to probably run more than 2 or 3 weeks.
And the last time you and I talked about that, we were worried about a narrow time frame. Today, we got to worry about a long time. I mean, it could be 6 weeks pollination. I know we've got some corn in southern Illinois and the Midwest here pollinating and tasseling already. And we've got corn in northern Illinois that it's going to be several weeks, a month or so before it tassels, as it's only a couple inches out of the ground because of the replanting.
And then a quick question on spring wheat. North Dakota and the dryness that they've had out there, has that gone away?
Well, it hasn't gone away. It's hard to fix. They've got such a short growing season up there, and if they don't get the crop in out of the ground and going good early in the season, it's hard to catch up. So rains right now are not going to do us much good in the North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Minnesota area, because we need to, it'll help some. It'll help the crops that did get off to a start, but it's not going to bring it back. On a weekly basis, we see the good to excellent conditions continue to slide. As a producer told me up there, it doesn't matter what the beauty contest looks like. You've got to have something for that to happen. And the wheat just didn't grow because there was no moisture when they planted it.
So let's talk about June 30th, next Friday. What's going to happen that will impact the market?
Well, we got a big USDA acreage report, planted acreage. And that's planted acreage assumed by the government as of June 1. So we're thinking that the farmers and the survey that the USDA did on June 1, it's likely not going to give us much change in corn planted acres. It actually could increase some of the soybean planted acres. However, we think the big change in acreage won't come until October, when the USDA finally gives us the planted, the prevent planted numbers. So it's going to it's probably not going to be a big deal, but dealing with the USDA, you never know when you're going to have a surprise coming from them. But we're kind of looking for probably steady acres on corn, maybe a little higher acres on soybeans.
And then we get the quarterly pig crop report.
Quarterly pig crop report is another thing that pork producers probably are going to show an increase in pork production. Looking at the numbers that we have right now, and we're dealing with, it looks like we're going to be 4% higher than by the marketing hogs later on this year. Could be as much as 4% higher than a year ago. And you add some weight to that, we're going to have plenty of pork supplies. So right now in the month of June and July, profitability is good for hog producers. But we think they need to use the opportunities in the market right now, using options or futures to price some of their risk or hedge their risk going into the fall.
And looking at the dress pork trade this week, pretty good advances there.
Very good advances. And, you know, where is that coming from? Coming from a little tighter supply of hogs that we didn't expect, the trade didn't expect. The other area that it's coming from is demand for the 4th of July holiday and Usually pork outpaces beef during this period of time, and it's doing again this year. We're also seeing probably some fill-in buying by retailers featuring pork because of the higher price of beef at the retail counter. So will that continue? Probably not very long. As we get into the dog days of summer here in the next, as we turn this calendar into July, it looks like we're going to have plenty of meat around both beef and pork.
So let's talk about beef for a moment. It's been on a roller coaster ride. It gets going one direction and it keeps going, and then suddenly it turns around and goes the other direction. What's ahead for cattle producers?
Well, I think it's not a real bright picture. I think there will be opportunities ahead of us. One of the big problems that we have is that we have the supply of cattle that are ready to go to market are increasing. Weights are increasing. Feedlots are going to have to get these cattle marketed and keep them marketed on a very fresh pace. So I think when you look at the charts and the technical aspect of the market, it projects that we could go down to the 108 to 106 area for fed cattle as we get into August, which historically August, October is a very weak period anyway. So I think we're trending lower here for a few months, and then probably a sideways, more choppy market after that.
And, of course, they can't change production that quickly in the cattle market. Hogs, short period, but not in cattle.
Cattle, it takes a little longer. As we've seen a year ago, we had very low prices at the end of 2016, and then we had a rally going into the May-June period here this year. So it's a 6-8 month time frame of the way this thing moves. And the futures are always futures. They're ahead of the game, at least what they think they are at most of the time. So that's what we got to look at right now. But with cheap feed cost, the cattle producer still is making money today.
And then looking at the export market, do traders pay a lot of attention to what we're doing in the export world with beef and pork?
Well, I think they do at times. The easy thing is to look at the supply and look at how much production we have on a weekly basis in livestock. But you got to look at why our price is high. And then when you look at that, you say exports are the main reason that this is continuing, because we can only eat so much meat in the U.S. Yeah. We've got to export it. And I think the arrangements that we've made with China on beef, certainly a positive. It probably doesn't change the total exports that much, but the attitude has changed, and that's extremely important.
Going back to June 30th, next Friday, supply-demand report comes into play on that one, doesn't it, on the grain market?
Well, it's the stocks in all positions report.
Stocks in all positions.
Yeah, stocks in all positions report come out. And that's going to be a watch very closely. How much corn, how much soybeans do we have as of June 1? The other big thing is how much is stored on the farm, I think, is a critical number that's got to be watched. In March, we had a lot more corn on the farm than we had in the commercial elevators. If the farmer's still holding this grain, it just doesn't look like we're going to have a much of a rally until that, as we said, have said in years while we've been in this business, is it's got to be in strong hands. And usually the grain in farmers' hands is not considered the strong hands. So it's got to be in commercial hands.
So does Allendale have any upcoming reports that are going to be available to your customers?
Well, we've actually got our webinar and our summer conference that's coming up here in the end of July that we'd like as many people to get involved with us on. They certainly can do that online. Mm-hmm. We sell that, and they can get all the details right at allendale-inc.com. And we've also got a monthly webinar that we'd love to have them join us on. That is free. So there's a lot of things going on. We try to keep people informed the best we can.
So again,
Allendale-inc.com. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us this week. Paul Georgie, who is with Allendale, I guess he owns it or leads it or something like that, based in McHenry, Illinois.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome to This Week in Agribusiness. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, joined by Steve Bridge. And good to have you here. And thanks to you and Max for all you did while I was away lounging in a hospital bed in Arizona.
Well, good to be in for Max for a couple of weeks, and also great to see you back at work, Orion.
Yeah, I decided that as president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, plus this job, he deserved some time off for what's been going on.
I agree.
We're going to talk about one of the topics, and that is agricultural trade with Cuba. David Salmonson, who is Senior Director, Congressional Relations, joins us. And it's been an interesting time in trade relations, hasn't it, David?
Well, there's certainly been a lot going on, and President Trump has been making lots of news, both at the beginning of his administration with TPP and now with his announcements about Cuba.
And let's talk about Cuba, because we have conducted agricultural trade with Cuba since trade parameters were changed a little bit a couple of years ago. How much trade have we done with Cuba?
You know, since the passage of legislation in Congress in the year 2000 allowing for U.S. food trade to Cuba, it's varied. We got up to almost $700 million a year in 2008, and right now we're selling about $220 million a year in food and ag products to Cuba.
And which of our ag products is in greatest demand in Cuba?
Well, it's varied across several commodities. Poultry is one of the top commodities, over $100 million worth of poultry products, so almost half. The rest is distributed among corn, soybeans, soybean meal, and a few other products. But certainly poultry is the number one product that is demanded from the U.S. by Cuba.
Dave, what does the recent direction from the Trump administration have on current ag trade or possible ag trade between the United States and Cuba?
Well, the policies that the president announced last week were mostly going towards travel and tourism, nothing directly on agriculture that we can see. Now, there's a potential that the president's comments, and we'll see how the regulations from the Treasury Department are written, that deals with the ports. Certainly, a lot of these things are at the military. Military has some certainly running of some of the ports. So would they have an impact on U.S. Products being imported through Cuban ports? We don't know that, but we'll watch the regulations closely. But there's nothing really that we could see that directly should have any impact on U.S. ag sales to Cuba.
And what might be the potential ultimately between the United States and Cuba when it comes to ag trade?
Well, I think there's a lot of potential for growth in two senses. One, we were really looking at the growth in tourism, especially U.S. Tourism, to have a demand for a larger variety of U.S. food products, especially if U.S. hotels were there, feeding American vacationers. We think there'd be a growing demand there. So if that's at least leveled off or somehow doesn't grow, that'll change the demand there.
Dave Salmonson with AFBF Talking Trade in Cuba with us today. Thank you, Dave.
Very much. Happy to be here.
It was a very busy week in the world of agriculture. It always is because of concerns that never go away. Do we have enough rain? Do we have too much? Do we have enough heat? Do we not have enough heat? That's always a topic of conversation at the rural coffee shop. But there were some big things that were happening this week, especially today. A jury in Kansas City, Kansas, today ordered Syngenta to pay $217.7 million to more than 7,000 Kansas farmers over its decision to commercialize a genetically modified strain of corn before China approved that they would import it. The verdict announced by lawyers for the farmers who blamed the Swiss company for causing catastrophic damage to them after Chinese officials began refusing U.S. corn shipments in 2013. We remember that, brouhaha. Well, this case, the first to go to trial, thousands of other corn producers and traders also seeking damages over China's non-approval of the agrochemical giant's corn seeds for importation. I can see literally dozens of cases coming to court. Lawyers for the corn producers said in a statement, the verdict was only the beginning. They have claimed that damages for farmers nationally totaled $5.7 billion. No surprise, Syngenta said it will appeal the verdict, which included only compensatory damages and no punitive damages. What did Syngenta say? We are disappointed with today's verdict because it will only serve to deny American farmers access to future technology, even when they are fully approved in the United States, which this variety was. So, that, of course, will go to the appeals court, and if you're one of those 7,000 Kansas farmers, I wouldn't spend the money in the next week or so, because that appeals court process can go on forever. And then the other big news this week, the announcement by Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue that he's going to shut off the import of fresh beef from Brazil. And that really got attention in Brazil because their Minister of Agriculture is heading for the United States to talk about it and to say, wait a minute, the country has already taken steps to address the U.S. safety concerns, but the U.S. Department of Agriculture's ban dealt a setback to Brazil's recently opened fresh beef trade with the United States, another black eye after some recent industry scandals. USDA cleared U.S. consumption of fresh beef from Brazil last year, and it still represents just 1% of the industry's exports. The rest of it is already processed and frozen beef. Now, let's take a look at the commodity world and cattle on feed report that came out today. No big surprises, and initial reaction to the report, neutral to friendly to the front months, but big placements and on feed, neutral to negative to back months. Here are the numbers. Cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. totaled 11,100,000 head on June 1st. That's up 3% above June 1st a year ago. And placements in feedlots totaled 2,120,000 head. That's up 12% from a year ago. And the marketings of fed cattle during May totaled 1,950,000 head, up 9% from a year ago. So we'll wait, of course, until Monday to see the reaction. But in the meantime, let's take a look at where we ended the trading today in livestock futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. This is where prices will be on Monday when they go back to trading. July lean hogs will trade at $85.30 starting Monday after gaining 15 cents a hundredweight today. The rest of the months ended the day lower. The August live cattle contract, after gaining $1.15 today, will start Monday at $115.27. And the August feeder cattle contract, which gained $1.82 today, will start trading next week at $144.95. Now, what about the grain market? Well, it was a mixed close on the market today. Corn and wheat ended the day and lower, and soybeans were mixed. So where do we start on Monday? July wheat will start at $4.59¾, dropping 1¼ cents a bushel today. July corn will start at $3.57¾ after dropping 3¾ cents today. The July soybean contract, though, will start the week at $9.45 after gaining $0.015 a bushel today. Looking ahead to next Friday, June 30th, that's the day of many reports from USDA supply demand, planted acreage, and quarterly pig crop report. Should be quite a day to end next week. Well, that's our time for this week. Thank you for staying with us here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.